This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Welcome to Place to Be Nation, Pops Looking Forward, Looking Back, the show that takes a look at the worlds of pop culture and sports, as well as looking back at events and seasons of the past. Here is your host, Andy Atherton.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of Looking Forward, Looking Back. Tonight we're going to kind of flip the script a little bit. Usually we talk movies, pop culture. Tonight we're going down the road of sports. That's right, I got me a great panel tonight of some of the best and brightest sports minds here at Place to Be Nation. And let's not waste any time. Let's bring him in here. Introducing first, he is the co-host of This Week in the NFL, This Month in the NFL, This Week in Sports, whatever it is that day with Mr. D'Amato, the Cowboy, Roger Morissette. Roger, thank you for joining me tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me, Andy. Happy to be here.
Yes, I appreciate it. You are one of our big sports minds here, so it's great to have you.
That's high praise right there. I'll do my best to live up to it.
I'm sure you will. Also joining us tonight, you hear him with me often. He is the co-host with me on the Year in Pop right here on the Pop feed. He is also the co-host of the Place to Be podcast, co-host of the Main Event. You hear him on many other shows, Pop Goes to Movies, Freak Out Drive-In. He shows up all the time on various and sundry podcasts. Mr. Scott Coscolo. Scott, thanks for joining us tonight.
Did you say in sundry or incendiary? Because I am always in fuego because it's fucking 100 degrees here in Connecticut.
I said insusiary.
Insusiary. Yes. Podcasts live from Mozambique. Cowboy and I have shared some rock lobster wings before.
We have.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yes, they are. I miss our other ones, though. Cowboy.
Firestarter.
With our nice
Firestarter, too. That bright yellow. You know, you just couldn't beat it.
By the way, this podcast is not brought to you by Boneheads. I wish it was.
Very anyway, jealous. I've never been there.
The day will come, Andy. The day will come. Anyway, pleasure to be here. I've been on a sports show probably since the last one I hosted. the last sports evolution Andy and I did back in the day. Anyway, good to be here. Always a pleasure.
Awesome, awesome. And rounding out our quartet tonight, first time I've had the pleasure of being on a podcast with gentlemen. Also met him and Roger at WrestleMania weekend and had a lot of fun. He is the host of Greetings from Allentown over on Pro Wrestling Only, as well as the co-host of the Adams Division podcast. And you can hear him on the wrestling feed often as the third man on the Place to Be podcast when they cover the Saturday Night's Main Events in the Vintage Vault. Mr. Peter Winston. Peter, thank you for joining us tonight.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be talking sports for actually, I do it on my podcast all the time. But I promised you right now that when we get to the NHL segment to only sob for a minute, maximum of 7 minutes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We'll time you.
Awesome. A lot of looking back there.
Yes. I don't know if you want to look back. Oh, I don't know. All right, cool. So in this segment, Block A, we're going to look forward, and we're looking forward to what is probably arguably the number one sport in this country. That is the NFL. You know, people's schedules are around it. You know, your Sundays, your Monday nights, your Thursday nights, and then later in the year, it's your Saturday afternoons. That's all it is from beginning of September till all the way through February. So we're going to look forward to this 2019 campaign, which we're in the midst of the preseason. I believe we just got through the second week of preseason. And we're going to go around, kind of talk about, like, what are your guys' feelings on what are some of the biggest off-season moves. Roger, we're going to start with you. Give us a one or two or however many big moves that you've seen in the NFL that will have an impact this season.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest would be, at least in my opinion, Odell Beckham getting traded to the Browns. The Browns all of a sudden have gone from a laughing stock to a team that a lot of folks are predicting will make the playoffs, and they have a loaded roster with Beckham, and then they also signed Kareem Hunt, who will have to serve a lengthy suspension, but he'll be back in week 10 or so. But yeah, Beckham to the Browns is the biggest move probably the last couple of years in the NFL, to have a number one receiver in his prime moved out of New York to Cleveland. It's a big deal, and it immediately the Browns are already on the upswing, and they have a nice young quarterback in Baker Mayfield, who showed a lot of promise last year as a rookie. And adding a true number one like that really helps them and makes them a contender.
Yeah. As a Giants fan, that kind of hurt me a little bit, but you know the guy.
You got Jabril Peppers.
Okay? Yeah,
like, something.
I think the guy kind of needed to get out of New York. I think he needs to be in a smaller market. That guy, I think. You know, one of those, you know, $1 million bodies, 5 cent head kind of deals.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if anyone, you know, of the four of us would be real happy catching passes from Eli.
Yeah.
The last couple years. So
that's true.
I think the kid, I mean, he's definitely like your prima donna receiver, right? Mm-hmm. Like your prototypical prima donna receiver. But I truly think he's like one of those guys that really cares about winning, and that winning will cure things for him. Unlike a guy, Antonio Brown, who, you know, apparently winning wasn't the only thing.
nothing will make him happy.
That's another big move.
Yeah.
Someone else can talk about that.
Scott, what about you? Give us a big offseason move. That's...
Well, I definitely agree with Cowboy on Odell for both teams. I think him leaving makes the Giants maybe a little more stable mentally, but I'll get more into the Giants later. I think maybe the biggest move, because I think it makes them inherently better on offense and will help the growth of their quarterback, is Le'Veon Bell. I think the Jets are going to be exponentially better on offense. They're still going to struggle, and you know Darnold's going to have his growing pains. He's still going to have the occasional stinker this year. But I think having a legitimate, bona fide tailback is going to enhance not only him, because the Jets' offensive line is not too bad. The Jet defense is going to be very good this year, and I think having a guy like Le'Veon Bell for Darnold is what Zeke would have for Dak in Dallas. And we'll get to the Cowboys later, because there's a whole other bowl of bullshit going on there. But I think they're going to enhance the Jets' offense to the point where they could finally maybe outscore teams that defensively they'll be able to shut down. But they've lost games in the last few years where they just haven't scored enough points. But I think that signing inherently helps them and will help Darnold grow in his second year. Antonio Brown would have been a nice choice if he wasn't such a fucking whack job. I don't know what it is with the water. I don't know if it's Oakland. I don't know what the deal is, but he's a dipshit. I mean, there's really nothing more you could say about it. Odell might be a little
before he got to Oakland.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly.
He just I don't know what's going on with him.
I don't either.
I mean, it almost seems like, you know, like he's got CTE or something. You hate to say it, but I mean, yeah. He had that thing last year where he threw furniture off like a 16th floor balcony, something like that, and almost hit somebody. Like, and I mean, this is a guy you didn't hear that kind of stuff about until like last year, and it just like the shit hit the fan last year.
Yeah.
He did report to camp today. He officially reported to the Raiders today.
He's not wearing his Red Grange leather helmet with no face mask.
He is complying with the new helmet regulation. So if they can get him on the field, I mean, the guy's an incredible player.
He absolutely is. No, you're right, Cowboy, 100%. No, he absolutely is.
He's like really, I think, already proving to be more trouble than he's worth, especially for a team like Oakland, to say what you want. They're probably not like going to be a Super Bowl contender or anything this year. Do you really want to have to deal with that bullshit if you're going 8-8? That's just me.
Yeah. I mean, I think that The Steelers had to get rid of both those guys. And I said this before. It's amazing. The Steelers were always a very stable franchise who never had these. I mean, I've been a football fan for a very long time. And the Steelers never had these problems. So I don't know if it's the water. I don't know if it's just the way the players are now. But, like, I mean, Mike Tomlin's only their third head coach in the last fucking 50 years. And I'm not saying it's his fault. I'm just saying that it just seems it's amazing that all of a sudden there's issues in Pittsburgh. I know a lot of people don't like Ben. Some do. We'll get to teams.
He's had his issues too.
Yeah, we'll get to teams later. But anyway, speaking of the Steelers, I think the biggest move was Le'Veon Bell, because I think the Jets are going to be much improved this year, and I think he's a huge addition for Darnold to grow as a quarterback and to help the Jets overall. Offensively.
Awesome. Peter, what about you? What's a big off-season move for you?
It kind of stole my thunder with the Antonio Brown thing, because I think it's far more fascinating between he and Bell, the effect not on their new teams, but to see where the Steelers go. But I will go to my backup, to the backup big off-season move, and Jacksonville getting Nick Foles from the Philadelphia Eagles. For whatever reason, people, I think, forget that they were so close to making it to Super Bowl 52, which, ironically, Jacksonville would have ended up playing the Eagles and probably losing to them, the team that they got Foles from. But just think about that team fell so far in 2018, and a lot of it got pinned on just how bad the quarterback play it was, that now you get somebody like Foles who, granted, his highs have been very, very high, and, you know, in other competent quarterbacking where a pick six is not happening every six quarters or so, how Jacksonville is going to look this year. And also wondering if, you know, their defense will come back to form that it was 2 years ago. But anytime a quarterback like that changes teams to a team that's trying to win, it gets my attention immediately, because usually those guys don't move all that often.
No, you don't see a lot of trades in the NFL in general, too. All right, so Scott, give me a rookie that's going to break out.
I think it's easy to say. I'm not gonna jump on the Daniel Jones bandwagon just yet. I think there's still more in Eli's tank than people want to admit. He could be a stud. You know what? Let one of the other guys. I want to think about this, because I wanted to say Daniel Jones, but I think I'm going to backtrack on that. Let Peter go first see what he.
Now, I don't follow college football all that closely outside of Notre Dame, and you know, I've heard good things about Kyler Murray coming out of the Arizona camp. But come on, it's the number one pick. I mean, that's not that's not anything that's going to be special. Plus, the Cardinals, I think, are going to be pretty bad. So. I am going to go totally Homer on this and just say how excited I am about this fella, an undrafted free agent, Jacoby Myers, with the Patriots, because they don't have any tight ends anymore. Apparently, the Patriots have, now that Rob Gronkowski is, well, we think retired. I don't think he's coming back. Some people think he is. They're gonna need to throw to their wideouts. They're going to need to throw outside the numbers, which is kind of been a unspoken weakness of Patriots teams over the last several years. And he's part of this core of big receivers. And I mean, he's the youngest one, because I don't think Demaryius Thomas is going to be contributing anytime soon. So I think he's one guy to actually look out for. And I know it's crazy because I'm talking about an undrafted free agent, but hell, it's been 10 years since they hit on Julian Edelman, who was a seventh round pick, so I guess the Patriots might be due for something again.
All right, Roger, what about you? Give us a rookie that's going to break out.
Sure. So, you know, one that, to talk about the Patriots real quick. I mean, with Josh Gordon coming back. I do like Myers as well. He's outplayed N'Keal Harry so far, who was the first round pick. And with Josh Gordon coming back, I think it does throw a little bit of cold water on both of those guys, because Gordon's a legit receiver. Just how long is he going to stay on the field?
Yeah.
We wish him all the best. So it's good to see him back. A couple of rookies. One, you know, kind of my number one would be guy in Chicago, running back David Montgomery. With Jordan Howard out of town, there's a clear opening on a team that wants to pound the rock, as they say, run the ball. Mm-hmm. And he's looked very good so far. I think he's going to have, you know, I think he's got a real good chance to win Rookie of the Year, probably 1,000 yards, 10 touchdowns, something like that. He's in a really, really nice situation, and he's a good player. Josh Jacobs in Oakland. Again, the Raiders, I don't think, are going to be very good. But I think, you know, when you take a running back in the first round, the thought is you're going to ride the running back that you take in the first round, because you're spending such a high pick on them. So I think he could very much be their bell cow and have a good year there, just based on volume. And then for a defensive guy, I like Devin White for Tampa Bay, mm-hmm. Linebacker. Their defense was putrid last year, and they're going to improve. And he very much looks like the real deal to me. So he would be my pick for defensive rookie of the year.
All right, cool. Scott, you come up all with right. your retraction?
Yeah, I got some. Yeah, I know. I got my wheels finally started to churn. I'm going to go back to the Giants, but I'm not going to go to Daniel Jones. I'm going to go to Dexter Lawrence. Mm-hmm. I watched him plenty at Clemson. He's an animal, and I think that he's the kind of athlete that will really rejuvenate that defense, which a lot of people think is starting to get a little sluggish. But I think he will revitalize them. Great guy up front. I agree with Cowboy on Devin White. I think he's going to be a stud for Tampa. Tampa needs to stop somebody this year, because that division's a slightly wide open, so they maybe can make some noise if they could stop somebody. Another defensive guy, Josh Allen. I like him a lot as well. He's a guy that maybe the Giants should have taken with the sixth pick, and they could have had two stud defensive guys in the first round, because Daniel Jones is going to be around. If I had to pick an offensive guy, I was going to, before watching highlights of his first game, I was going to say Dwayne Haskins, but he's got some, I mean, he throws worse than some other rookies. He's got like a DeMarcus Russell trajectory sometimes with his throws. Let me think of a good offensive guy. Kyler Murray, I think, needs a bit of a curve. I'm just worried Kyler Murray's going to get bludgeoned by somebody.
He's going to put up numbers in that offense.
Yeah.
I mean, because they're going to run, they're running the spread offense, essentially, right? The college offense.
Yeah, pretty much. It's Kingsbury's offense, yeah.
So he's going to put up a bunch of numbers. But I kind of agree with you, Scott, that I don't think it's going to lead to many wins or anything.
No, I don't think so either, because the defense is still is going to be a bit of a struggle.
And as much as it, like, you hate to say, like, I need a guy. If a guy's 5'8 or whatever he is playing quarterback, I really need to see it before I believe that he can do that in the NFL.
Right.
I mean, guys, you know, if you're shorter than me, I find it difficult. I mean, I guess he's got all the talent in the world, but he really didn't. His last preseason game, they didn't look very good at all. Just a couple of nights ago against the Raiders. I mean,
yeah.
that's not exactly the 85 Bears.
Oh, no, no. You know what? There's a couple of second round offensive guys I like. Both guys I watch, you know, because working with for CBS, I watch a lot of SEC football. So two guys, two second rounders jump out at me. Debo Samuel from South Carolina. Who was drafted by the Niners. I think he's going to have a good year. And A.J. Brown from Ole Miss. Good hands. I think he could thrive with Mariota in Tennessee. So those are two guys I like a lot. I like – anytime you see skill guys out of the SEC, you're going to succeed if you can just get them the ball. So I'm going to say this. I'll say the two wide receivers for the SEC, Debo Samuel from South Carolina – for the Niners, and probably A.J. Brown for Ole Miss. And I think Dexter Lawrence for the Giants, the lineman from Clemson. I think they're going to be standout.
All right. Very cool. All right. Now, we talked about the rookies. Let's talk about some veterans. that are going to have big seasons, maybe bounce backs. Who knows? Peter, let's start with you. Give us a veteran or two that you know you think is going to have a big year.
Oh boy, you might want to come back to me on that because the first name that came to mind, and this is not very original, but you might be looking at Pat Mahomes setting the touchdown record, which feels like it gets broken far too often in the last 12 or 13 years. But, you know, they're going to be out for blood because of the way they lost in the AFC Championship. And, like, they're going to be just gunning it for the entire regular season. Why don't we go around the table?
So I'll go first this time.
A Peter, little bit more original than that.
Peter bailed me out the last segment. I'll go first this time.
Yeah.
I'll go first this time. Justin's going to hate me with this comment because he fucking hates this guy. But I'm going to say Joe Flacco. I think he's going to – I have a feeling he's going to thrive in Denver. He obviously was not liked in Baltimore. Meanwhile, the guy won a Super Bowl, but then again, so did Trent Dilfer, so who knows. But I think and he's another – you know, Joe Flacco doesn't have it easy. I don't know. I know Drew Locke's there, the kid from Missouri. So he's going to have another kid breathing down his neck like Lamar Jackson was breathing down his neck in Baltimore and eventually cost him his job. I have a feeling we're going to see the Joe Flacco that took them to the Super Bowl in 2012. I think Denver's going to have a good year. I know we're going to get more to teams in a minute, but I think Denver might be pretty good. And I think Flacco's going to be a big part of it. I know a lot of people don't have a lot of faith in him, but I think we're going to see good things in Denver this year from him.
All right.
Because, again, I think a lot of it is he goes from one team where he's sweating it out with a rookie to another team where he's now sweating it out with a rookie. So if he wants to keep playing in the NFL, he's going to have to rise. So I like Flacco.
All right, cool. Roger, what about you?
Yeah, so I disagree a lot with that one, Scott, but we can talk about it.
None of you Rhode Islanders like Joe Flacco. I don't even get a hard on for the Blue Hens of Delaware. I don't know.
I think he's better than Keenum, who they had last year.
Like, yes.
And they have a good defense, so they could be a good team. So I don't hate it that much, but I don't think he's much of a quarterback anymore. But Drew Locke is considerably worse, so I don't think he's going to worry too much about his job. They came out and said Drew Locke, what was the quote? Like his offensive coordinator, I think, came out and said he's not a quarterback yet. So that's probably not a guy that you're going to.
That's true. Yeah.
I'm assuming. Yeah. So without stating like an obvious kind of guy, I think I really like Cam Newton to come back from his injury strong this year. I mean, he was very much a shell of himself at the end of last season, and they, you know, missed the playoffs because of it. They say he's recovered. The shoulder looks good. He's got his deep ball back. I think it's that division is probably the best division in football, I think. And I think they have a chance to win that division with him and Christian McCaffrey. Carson Wentz is another guy who I think is going to have a really, really good year. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if either one of those guys won the MVP. I think that they're both very capable, and it's really just a health thing. And In the AFC, I mean, we talked about the Browns. So if the Browns are really going to step up, Baker, right, has to take another step. And I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about Tom Brady. it's an obvious one, but he's 40. You know, he's 43 years old. A lot of people think, you know, that the bottom's going to drop out here any day. I think he's got one more good run left in him.
Okay, Peter, what about you? Do you come up with any more over there?
Well, here's the thing. I wrote this name down before, but I was kind of afraid to say it because I believed in the Jets last year so much that when I did my NFL wins pool, I actually spent a fairly high pick on the New York Jets. Didn't quite work out with only 4 wins on the season. But I still believe in Sam Darnold. Just throw out that last game against New England where everything was kind of going haywire for the Jets in that one. His last 3 or 4 games that he played last year, he was showing at least signs that he was getting it. I know there was a game against the Packers. He threw for over 300, had 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, because he had an issue with that a little bit earlier in the season. And having somebody like Lev Bell there will take a lot of the pressure off. He could just hand the ball off 25, 30 times, or even just use him for play action maybe make plays down the field that way. So I forgive you, Sam Darnold and the New York Jets, for going 4-12 last year while me having you in a wins pool. However, you better deliver this year, because I'm going to feel foolish for putting this guy up as a breakout candidate for this year if they go 4-12 again.
I mean, he's just a baby. I mean, wasn't he the youngest player in the whole NFL last year? He's the youngest – week one, right? He was the youngest guy to ever start a game, I believe. I think so.
And the training wheels are off. Yeah.
He's got all the talent in the world, and he's just got to put it together. And it's going to happen. And I agree very much with you and Scott that having Lev Bell – As a receiver, Lev Bell's like the best receiving running back in the league. Having that security blanket is going to help him so much. And I think that there's a good chance that your prediction there will come to fruition there, Peter.
Let's hope. Drink some Beyond Pete. All right. Cool. All right. Roger, give us teams on the upswing and teams going down. You know, what franchise you think are headed upwards and who's going to the basement?
Yeah, well, you know, the funny thing about the NFL is it always you know, when you're making predictions at this time of year, mm-hmm. it's always like, oh, the teams that did well last year are going to do well again this year. And usually, other than the Patriots, that's not true, right? It's usually everything just flips on its head. So teams on the upswing, I talked about Cleveland. That's a very trendy one, obviously, mm-hmm. right? So
how can they not?
Everyone would have them. I do agree on Jacksonville being a potential on the upswing, and I talked about Carolina being on the upswing. Teams that I think will falter and not be as good as they were last year, Minnesota. Not that they were great last year, but I think they'll be worse this year. The Steelers, as much as we say it's not going to hurt them to lose those guys, I think it's difficult, and they're in a tough division. They have the Browns and the Ravens in that division. I don't think they're going to be bad, but I don't think they're going to be like a Super Bowl contending Steelers team.
All right. Scott, what about you?
I'll do two of each. Two teams on the upswing. I'm going to go, and I know the defense is good, and I know my pick for a veteran was unpopular, but I think Denver's going to make some hay in that AFC West. I do agree with Peter that Kansas City is going to go out and try to slaughter everybody to make amends for what happened. But I think Denver is going to be pretty good. I'll do one from each conference. I like Denver in the AFC. In the NFC, I kind of like Carolina. I'm going to kind of ride Cowboys coattails with Cam. I think Carolina will be better. That NFC South is not going to be terrible. I think the Falcons will be a little better. New Orleans is New Orleans. I mean, even if this is – I don't know if there's rumors that this is it for Drew or if he's got – I mean, I know obviously he's still putting up buco fucking numbers, you know. But I'm going to go Carolina on the upswing in the NFC.
Yeah. Tampa will be better in that division too with Bruce.
Yeah.
Bruce yep. Arians is a good coach.
He's a tremendous coach. I agree. Teams on the downswing. I'm going to go with Houston in the AFC South, in the AFC. I mean, they won the division last year, but they look like dog shit in the playoffs. And I have a feeling they're going to take a step back this year. So I'm going to see Houston in the AFC. In the NFC, I want to say, believe it or not, being completely objective, I could very easily say the Cowboys, but fuck only knows. This is the thing about being a Cowboy fan. They could have drama up the fucking wazoo and go 13-3, or everything could be hunky-dory and they can go – fucking 6-10. So I don't have a clue. So I'm just gonna. If you guys want to pick them for either one, be my guest. I'm not touching them with a 10-foot pole. I think a team on the downswing in the NFC. And this is I'm not being biased whatsoever, but I'm gonna say the Eagles.
Yeah.
I think the Redskins are gonna be a little better. I think the Giants are gonna be a little better. I think it's not gonna be as easy for the Eagles to bag either the division or a wild card. And I don't think, and I think a wild card is going to be tough this year in the NFC because you got a lot of good secondary teams in the north in all the divisions. I mean the NFC North I think is going to be very competitive, except maybe Detroit. We talked about the South being very good, and even the NFC West. I mean, who's the team coming in with the lowest expectations besides Arizona? I mean, Seattle maybe. I don't know. I mean, I think the Rams are going to be good again. I think the Rams are the best team in that division and probably will be the favorite in the NFC again. So grabbing a wild card spot is not going to be easy. And I think the Eagles might be lagging a little behind the rest of those secondary teams, even Green Bay, Chicago. I think looking for trying to bag those two wild card slots in the NFC is going to be a dogfight this year. So I don't think Philly's going to have it as easy as some think. So I'm going to say the Eagles are going to take a slide down in the NFC. I think Houston in the AFC. And then my upswing teams are Denver. And I want to give one vote to the Jets. And then in the NFC, I got to see Carolina. I like your analysis on Cam Cowboy. I think Carolina could be a team to look out for. That's a team that could easily win 11 or 12 games if everything clicks.
All right, cool. Peter, what about you?
The first team that came to mind for I'll start with the ones that I think will decline is the Baltimore Ravens. Of course, their whole identity now for like 20 years has been built on their defense, and they allowed fewer than 300 points last year. But I'm sorry, I'm just not buying into the kind of offense that they were running with Lamar Jackson. It just kind of felt like the kind of Tim Tebow smoke and mirrors thing going on late in the year that teams will eventually be able to figure out. I'm not saying that, you know, this guy is definitely going to suck going forward. It's just that I don't see that as a kind of long-term solution. Number two team that I see declining, and this is probably a function of them actually going 13-3, is the Los Angeles Rams, because the way they kind of lucked themselves into a Super Bowl. I mean, that's its whole other issue. But the way they lost that Super Bowl after they scored a million points in the regular season, and then they get there and they score only three in the Super Bowl. I mean, that has got a sting. So I could see them being one of those teams that has a bit of a hangover, maybe is a little sluggish coming out of the gate. I'd also written down Carolina as a team that could decline, but I see that as a function of Cam Newton's health. And also Detroit, but they weren't very good to begin with. They've looked as bad. They looked worse than any team that I've seen in the preseason so far. On the upswing, one team that I think has a chance to surprise is the San Francisco 49ers, because they were a 4-12 team last year. But if you look at their points for and points allowed, they were much more like a 6 or 7 win team. So now with Bosa that they drafted?
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. I think that they could be an 8 or 9 win team, especially, you know, you got Arizona in that division, although Seattle and the Rams will probably still be tough. And the Green Bay Packers, which I forgot that they had the weird tie game last year at 6-9-1. As long as they keep Aaron Rodgers out of the hospital for, let's say, 14 games, they should be good to win nine games, I would think. So that would be up from the 6.5, the way the NFL calculates it. So San Francisco, Green Bay on the upswing.
All right. Very cool. All right. Now, time to put up or shut up. Let's get some predictions out of you guys. Scott, I'll start with you. Give us who are your division winners and wild card picks. We'll go on to the big game after this. But right now, division winners and your wild card.
Okay. AFC first. East, the Patriots. But they're not going to go undefeated in division. Well, they never do anyway, really. I mean, sometimes they do, but a lot of times they usually suck in Miami, so they'll probably lose to the Dolphins in Miami again. But North, fuck it. I'll take Cleveland. Why the hell not? Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll tie for they'll tie with somebody else, and because I mean you guys are right. I mean they're the three teams in the division aren't really that great, so who knows? AFC South, I like the Colts. I think Andrew Luck's gonna have another good year. And in the West, Kansas City, because I agree with Peter. I think Mahomes is gonna throw for like 5,000 yards. Two wild cards. I'm gonna go with Tennessee and the Jets. Those are my wild card teams in the AFC.
Okay.
I think Jets are going to go 9-7 and get a wild card. NFC. Division. Fuck it. Right now, I'm just going to say it. I mean, they probably won't. who knows? But I think the Cowboys will repeat if everybody comes back, because they offensively, they really are the best offense in the division. Everybody else is either in limbo or have a rookie quarterback. So if Zeke comes back and everybody, you know, shakes hands and kisses babies and everything's fine, they really are the best team in the division. In the North, oh God. I'll take Green Bay. I mean, it's Aaron Rodgers. He's stabbed me in the heart a billion fucking times. I could easily see Green Bay winning 13 games. South, I like Carolina. I'm jumping on Cowboys bandwagon. I like the Panthers. And in the West, I think the Rams again. Although I agree with Roger, Peter, that they will probably dip down a bit. I don't think they'll win 13 games. So Dallas, Green Bay, Carolina, and L.A. And the wild card teams will be Chicago and New Orleans.
Hmm. All right.
I think Trubisky's going to have a good year. I think the Bear. I think Minnesota's going to take a step back. It's Kirk fucking Cousins, for Christ's sakes. I mean, you know. But, I mean, I know their defense is really good, but I have a feeling the Vikings would take a step back. So I like the Bears and the Saints for the wild card.
All right, cool. Peter, what about you? Who are your division winners and wild card picks?
Now, you're going to think a couple of these in the AFC are pretty bat you know what, but well, not the Patriots in the AFC East, because it would be silly to, you know, not pick them at this point, and Kansas City as well. But you may think I'm insane for choosing the Cincinnati Bengals to win the AFC North, just on the basis of I feel like something is wrong with all the other teams, and something's probably wrong with the Bengals,
and they're not.
But the Raiders of the East.
If you look every year in the NFL, there's always one weird division winner. It's like, huh? You know, how did that happen? So I'm just kind of buying a lottery ticket there. Although, is it any more crazy than me thinking the Jaguars will return to the form that they showed in 2017 and win the AFC South somehow? My two wild cards of the AFC are Cleveland, who I expect to be better, but I think they're burdened a bit by some expectations that may harm them early on. If they overcome that the first 4 or 5 weeks, then, you know, color me surprised. And Denver, I have as the other wild card, because I don't think that they were quite as bad as they showed last year. And having Flacco there, I think, will be a big help for them. In the NFC, for the division winners, I think the Eagles in the East, Chicago will repeat in the North, and the New Orleans and Seattle. So Seattle, I guess, would be the Seattle and Philly would be the only new winners that I have there. And I apologize to Criscolo, because I do not have the Cowboys snagging one of the wild cards. I have the Rams, who will recover enough. I mean, you decline from 13 wins to 10. That's still a 3-win decline. And the Atlanta Falcons, they score a lot of points, and they give up a ton of points, and they're very entertaining to watch. And for that reason, I kind of like to see them in the playoffs, because God knows when they lose in the playoffs, they know how to lose in the playoffs.
Yes. Awesome. All right. Cowboy, who are your division winners and wild card picks?
Yep. I'll go with the Patriots, Baltimore. I also like the Jaguars. I would have said the Colts, but I'm very concerned about Andrew Luck's injury. It reminds me of his shoulder when they kept saying he was okay, and then he missed the whole season. So I like the Jags. And then the Chiefs, and then my wild card teams would be the Cleveland and Denver.
Okay. NFC?
NFC, the Eagles, the Bears, the Panthers, and the Rams, with the wild card teams of the Seahawks and the Cowboys.
All right.
What's the over-under on Carson Wentz getting fucking hurt again?
I think he's going to make it through the whole season. I told you, I think he might win the NFL MVP.
He's got the talent for it if he doesn't, you know, get whacked in the shin or something.
Yeah, I mean, he brings it on himself a little bit, and I think, like, you know, they can coach that out of him, right? Like, slide. Sure. Don't take on. You don't have to take every linebacker on head first.
Right.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think they're a very good team, and we'll see what happens. I mean, you never know. But I just think he's a real talented kid, and I think this is the year he probably puts it all together.
Yeah. All right. All right, Pete, we're going to start with you. Let's give us your Super Bowl prediction. You can give us, if you want to give us the two teams that are going to make the championships in each league and who's going to face in the Super Bowl and who will win. It's up to you. So who do you think is going to be playing in the big game in February?
Well, you're probably expecting me to pick the Patriots to make the Super Bowl, but no. I'm not going to go with the obvious homer pick here. I am going to choose Kansas City to defeat the Patriots this year. The game would be in Arrowhead again, but this year they actually managed. Let's just say they win the coin flip in overtime and go down and score. Yeah, that's the ticket. And in the NFC, with apologies to my podcast partner, Steve Bennett, I have Philadelphia going over New Orleans when the Saints are called for a pass interference penalty on a coach's challenge late in the fourth quarter, thereby getting burned by the very rule that was put in by the Saints getting screwed. So that leads to a Super Bowl that is an Andy Reid Bowl. Let's make it a burrito bowl. Kansas City over the Philadelphia Eagles down in Miami.
All right. Roger, give us your Super Bowl predictions.
Yep. So I never picked the Patriots to make the Super Bowl, and since they've made the last four, I'm not going to start now. I don't want to. I don't want to jinx them. So I hate to go with the chalk, but I'll go with the Chiefs. The Chiefs in the AFC versus. I mean, I really like Carolina this year. So versus Carolina, and I like Carolina to win the whole thing.
Wow. All right. Wow. All right, Scott. Clean it up.
I think Super Bowl, whatever fucking number it is. Remember, Peter, when we were younger, we actually remembered the fucking numbers. I don't even remember that. I don't even know what where the hell the game is. I should remember that, too.
It's 54, and the reason why I remember it is the NFL's having an issue with trademarks down in Miami because there's a club down there called LIV. And they can't trademark the letters for use in the state of Florida because of that club.
So the club has to sponsor the Super Bowl, and maybe the strippers there will be the halftime show.
I don't know what kind of club it is.
Yeah, I think we all do. Let's just ask Bischoff and the Nitro Girls. No, Super Bowl 54 will be the Kansas City Chiefs and the New Orleans Saints.
Wow,
I think this is gonna be the last run for Drew Brees, but Pat Mahomes will hoist the trophy.
All right.
So Andy Reid will finally win something that matters and not suck.
So, all right. Yeah. Good. Good picks. Hopefully, somebody on this show is correct. And we'll see.
Got a good
happens.
Chance of it.
Yeah. You know. Anyway, cool. Awesome.
Except nobody picked the Pats, and that's probably what's going to happen. So.
We're gonna get a Pats Saint. We're gonna get a Pats Rams rematch, and it'll be 3-2.
Well, so, God, I hope not.
The Rams will win 4-3 on a pair of safeties. So,
it'll be the worst Super Bowl ever.
Just watch that.
Yeah. Oh God, what a bowl of haircuts that was. Anyway, all right. So awesome.
Here.
Anyway, awesome. Awesome. Looking forward. Hopefully, like I said, some of you guys' predictions come to pass. And when we come back, we're going to look back. We're going to look back at the NHL and the NBA seasons from this past year. So, with the Cowboy Roger Morissette, with Peter Winston and Scott Criscolo, I'm Andy Afton. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Consideration paid for by the following.
Place Two Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceTwoNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place Two Nations Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place Two Nations
feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our previous podcasts over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available at PlaceNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceNation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And be sure to join us at our forum at Bigelow34.proboards.com for all sorts of wrestling, sports, and pop culture discussion each and every day, where you can make your voice heard. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back to Looking Forward, Looking Back Sports Edition number one. I'm hanging out here with Scott Criscolo, the Cowboy, Roger Morissette, and Peter Winston. And we want to talk about Place to Be Nation really quick. We have our great feeds. You're listening to the P2B and Pop feed full of comics, movies, music, and a little more sports. So a little something for everybody here on the Pop feed, over on the Wrestling feed. We talk about the classics. We talk about the modern stuff. We got the Place to Be podcast. We have Main Event, we have Row 1, Seat 1, lots of great shows on both feeds, so check them out. And also don't forget, PlaceNation.com. Content is coming up, growing our 1994 look back 25 years ago with great articles. Peter, you just wrote one about the strike of 1994.
Yes, fun read. I poured my heart and soul into researching every team from 1994 because, my God, I had the time to do it.
Awesome. Yeah, that was the year that everybody thought the Expos and the Yankees were going to go to the World Series, I believe.
Well, they were the two best teams.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Expos were going to win.
Yeah, they probably were, yeah. As a Yankee fan, I will admit to that.
they had a ton of lefties, yeah. and the Yankees didn't have Jimmy Key and those guys yet. I don't think they did anyway. Well, maybe he did, but I still think the Yankees weren't quite there yet.
No, they were just on the cusp of the dynasty starting. Also, don't forget, every Wednesday, Glenn's Walk Around the Web, plus more content coming these days, new articles, the weekend playlist, the drafts, all kinds of fun stuff. And the big thing we're talking about, though, is the Greatest Song of the 80s tournament. We are right in the smack dab middle of round two, which should be actually coming to a close in the next week or so, and we move on to round three. Well, that's right. We started with 512 songs. We're almost down to the 128 mark. So check it out. Like the page. Like all of our stuff. PlaceNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. So just one little more bit of housekeeping to take care of. So tonight is the first episode of Looking Forward, Looking Back. Now, when I first started this show, I envisioned there being sports editions as well as pop culture editions, which you've heard many of, which I usually do movie previews. We're going to probably do some television ones at some point. So, but however, I can admit I am a sports fan. I'm not as big a sports guy as I used to be. I used to watch a lot more. I used to pay a lot closer attention, but that has kind of waned over the years, and I've kind of become more of a movie, real true movie geek, and that's where I spend a lot of my free time. I do watch my football. I do try to catch the Rangers and Yankees. My hockey and baseball teams whenever I can, but I think that this show should have a true sports guy as the host. So when we do these Looking Forward, Looking Back sports editions, the Cowboy, Roger Morissette, will be your host. And Roger, I want to say thank you for taking this over. Figure about at least three times a year when we're looking forward, looking back to, after the World Series, that'll be a good time to look back at baseball, look forward to hockey and basketball, and then again, in, we'll say, around late February, where we'll look back at the NFL, look forward to baseball, and so on and so forth. So, Roger, I want to say thank you.
Very much looking forward to it, Andy. And yes. You just send me those reminder messages, and I'll take care of the rest.
I'll be the silent partner producer behind the scenes to keep you honest.
Yeah, very much looking forward to it, and it'll be a good companion for myself and John's sports show that we do whenever we have the chance to. So. Yeah. Fantastic.
Yes. Awesome. So, but we'll talk about tonight's show where I'm still here. We're going to talk about the NBA, the 2018-2019 campaign, which was won by the Toronto Raptors over the Golden State Warriors. We're going to start with Scott. Talk about some teams that overachieved this year in the NBA.
Well, Toronto.
Yeah, of course.
The world champions overachieved. I mean, we knew they had talent, and we knew with Kawhi they were going to be good, but we didn't think they were going to be that good. I mean, they were good from the get-go. You know, they bounced around with Milwaukee for the best record in the league or in the conference for a while, and they definitely did that. So I'll put them. But if you want to talk about a big-time overachiever – I'll do one from each conference. In the East, you've got to say the Brooklyn Nets. But, I mean, who would have thought the Nets would have not only finished two games over 500, but actually finished sixth in the East? Hmm. And they're going to be better next year. So, obviously, they made some huge strides. They're going to miss Durant for a year, but they'll still be pretty good. So, I mean, if you had told me that the Brooklyn Nets were going to finish with the sixth best record in the East, I thought you were on crack. Overachieving in the West? I'll say San Antonio. They won 48 games. You know, guys retired. Kawhi was gone. And, I mean, I know they had a good amount of talent, but I didn't think they would make the playoffs. But they did. And, you know, they had a pretty good series with Denver. But I think they kind of came out of nowhere at the end and made a great run. So if I had to pick two overachieving teams, I would say Brooklyn in the East and San Antonio in the West.
All right, cool. Pete, I know you're not the biggest NBA guy, but you got any picks for teams that overachieved?
Well, Toronto, as was mentioned, is the obvious one because when they made the Kawhi Leonard trade back in summer of 2018, I thought it was so insane because of the way Kawhi kind of exited San Antonio. Because my whole thought process was, who the hell gets into a fight with Greg Popovich, this legend who's, you know, been around for two decades in the same place? But, you know, they certainly shut me up. In the Western Conference, and this is weird because they didn't make the playoffs. I probably couldn't name two guys from this team. The Sacramento Kings winning 39 games – when the Celtics had their first round pick, and the thought was, oh, they're going to get another thing like the Brooklyn pick, maybe drafting between 2 and 5 because of the conditions on it. But they end up winning 39 games, more than the Los Angeles Lakers, as Scott Criscolo knows. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like that, granted, it's not the place to be in the NBA, to coin a phrase, that, you know, high 30s wins, because, you know, you end up drafting 13th or 14th. But by the measure of, did they do better than we thought they would? Yeah, probably by about 15 wins, the way I looked at it.
All right. Roger, give us teams that overachieved.
Yeah, in the East, I mean, Brooklyn is the obvious one. And Scott pointed that out. I mean, they were a big surprise. And maybe it's when we get into the underachieving teams, maybe that's why I made a sound when someone said they would be better this year. But we could we'll see. But no, they were a fun team to watch. D'Angelo Russell, a guy who cast aside by the Lakers, number 2 overall pick. Not the guy you want to take out on the road if you're cheating on your wife, apparently, because he takes pictures and sends them to her, whatever he did to Nick Young. But it ran him out of town. And He was a legit crunch time guy and made like $140 million with the Warriors. So great, great redemption story there. And Brooke Lopez, I'm sorry, that's Milwaukee. He was a former Net. But yeah, I like the Nets a lot as an overachieving team for a team that nobody said. I mean, in the Raptors, I don't know if they overachieved. I mean, they were always either first or second in the East, and they just couldn't beat LeBron. And, you know, they added Kawhi, and Kawhi is a special player. It all fell into place. But, I mean, we knew when they added Kawhi that if he was healthy, right, he's one of the five best players in the league, and DeMar DeRozan certainly isn't. And so I don't think it's that big of a surprise that they made the finals, and the way they won the finals, we'll talk about. Don't know if that would have happened without a few things happening to Golden State. In the West, overachieving team, I think the Clippers really stand out as an overachieving team. I mean, they sold their best. You know, they were sellers at the trade deadline. They got rid of Tobias Harris, who was their who was like one of their two best players. And they still held on in a very competitive Western Conference for the eighth seed. And then they won two games in the series against the Warriors in the playoffs. So I think that's a big overachieving team.
All right. Well, we'll stick with you, Roger. Talk about teams that disappointed this year.
Yeah. So right at the top of that list is going to be our hometown Boston Celtics, who all the talent in the world. If you go going into last season, you could have polled every executive in the league and asked which situation would you like. And that includes like Golden State. And I'd say 95% of them would have said the Celtics, with their coming off an Eastern Conference Finals appearance, one game away from beating LeBron and getting to the finals without Kyrie and without Gordon Hayward. Kyrie and Gordon Hayward are coming back. Tatum and Brown and Smart and Rozier are a year older, going to be a little better. They have all this draft capital, and it was just a complete dumpster fire all year. They underachieved all season, led by Kyrie, and Tatum had a bad year, but I think some of that was Kyrie. As a Celtic fan, I have to just blame Kyrie for everything because that way there's hope for the future. But in reality, I mean, his no-show, you guys, even if you don't watch a lot of basketball, people listening, if you want to see someone, sorry about that, guys. That's my dog.
The mere mention of Kyrie.
Yeah, he hates Kyrie too.
But if you want to see a guy mail it in the playoffs, just with a big postage stamp and just awful with the last two games of that Milwaukee series, he was putrid. And it was like, not just that he wasn't playing well, like you could tell he just didn't give a shit, which is good luck, Brooklyn. In the West, I think people would say Golden State, and I'm not going to say that. I think they built their team purposely to maybe not have the greatest regular season. They still finished first, but they were built for the playoffs and then got hit by injuries. And I hate to say this, Scott, there's a pretty clear winner for most underachieving team in the West, and they're out in Los Angeles.
Yes, they are.
You bring LeBron James in. The expectation is the finals, right? At the very least, you should make the playoffs. And I know he missed some time, but he didn't miss that much time. And they were an equal dumpster fire to the Celtics, who will most likely be better this year as well.
Yeah. Scott, give us some underachievers.
Well, Cowboy just told me we gave you mine. I'll get to them in a minute. My disappointing team's the Knicks. I thought they were at least going to go 19-63, and they couldn't even get to 19. No, I'm only kidding.
That's a stab to the heart of some of our faithful.
Yes, I know. I love you, D'Amato. How about Charlotte? Yeah, I thought the Hornets would have done a lot better than 39-43 and not even made the playoffs. I mean, it was probably a foregone conclusion that Kemba was leaving anyway, but they could have at least you would have figured they would have at least made the playoffs. But then you got – I mean, it's funny. Charlotte doesn't make the playoffs, but then you got Brooklyn, Orlando, and Detroit picked up the rear in the East. Three teams you never would have thought probably would have made the playoffs. So I got to say Charlotte in the East. I thought they would have done better than 39 wins. In the way, I got to go with Golden State. They should have won the whole. No, I'm only kidding. the Lakers were a shit show. Look, I remember sitting there. I was sitting at actually Dr. G's house when the announcement came through that LeBron had signed with the Lakers. And he looks at me and he goes, "Oh, you're gonna go buy a jersey?" I'm like, "No, because they're not gonna make the playoffs." All of my teams, I drink a ton of Kool-Aid. Usually it's the Cowboys I drink a ton of Kool-Aid. Or as Peter, who also is a fellow Irish fan, I drink a lot of Notre Dame Kool-Aid. But the Lakers, I'm pretty much a realist. And I knew, because the Lakers were another organization like the Raiders, like the Yankees, who were run by one man and had dipshit kids. Or unless you're the Mets, in which the father's just as much of a dipshit, but that's a different story altogether. You had Al Davis die, and his son's a moron. And you've got Dr. Jerry Buss, who bought the Lakers in 1980 from Jack Kent Cook. And instantly, they were a dynasty and stand next to the Celtics as the two greatest teams in the history of the National Basketball Association. They combined to have 32 of the league's, what, 50-something NBA championships? I mean, that's fucking ludicrous. 33. Look, I just, you know what's sad, Peter? I shortchanged myself. I didn't even shortchange the Celtics. 33. No,
what's sad is you're counting the Minneapolis ones, but that's a discussion for another time.
Well, that they are a franchise. Anyway, the situation is, I knew even signing LeBron that the Lakers were not going to be like, you know, this wasn't like when he went to Cleveland, they already had a halfway decent team, or obviously Miami. The Lakers were a shit show even going in. And I like Brandon Ingram, but I really wanted to keep him, but I always felt like something was missing. And all the discussions and trades, and I mean, the two bus kids are dipshits. They really are. And so everyone thought they were going to be like a two seed in the West. I'm like, what fucking crack are you smoking? They'll be lucky if they're like a seven. And sure enough, they weren't even that. So I might be the one Laker fan that wasn't surprised that they were 37-45. Having said that, and this is even before, oh, we'll get to this season in a minute, but I was not surprised whatsoever. Were they still disappointing? Yes, absolutely. Was I surprised as a fan of the team? No. No. He wasn't walking into a team of studs and he was the final piece. He was walking in as a superstar with some aching legs with a lineup of fucking retreads. And just as the season progressed, they just couldn't get their shit together. And I watched a lot of them on TNT, and I watched a lot of games in the end, and there were nights that they were unwatchable.
And he signed all those guys that couldn't shoot. It made no sense at all. Like, you always want to surround LeBron with shooters, and they signed Rondo and Lance Stevenson, all these guys who can't shoot.
No, they signed other passers. They signed good passers and good defenders, but nobody that could put the rock in other than him. And no, it was a fucking mess. Now, well, we'll get to this season in a minute, but I obviously have to pick my own team because they even though I knew that they weren't going to be as good as everybody thought they were, I didn't think they'd be this bad. And in the East, I got to go with Charlotte. I thought the Hornets would be a lot better than 39 wins.
All right, Pete, any teams disappoint?
Well, you know, I was originally going to go with the Celtics, but I also had the thought of making a cheeky remark about, boy, Cleveland was a real disappointment. They make the finals 4 years in a row, and they only win 19 games. Something happened between us, but yeah. But, I mean, the Celtics' problems are well documented, but I got to point to another team in the East. I know Indiana winning 48 games might not have been a disappointment for them, but you get to the playoffs and you're playing this dysfunctional Celtics team and you get swept out in four games straight. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know, they should catch a little bit of heat for that. In the West, I got to go with Oklahoma City because this turns out to be their last ride with Westbrook and George and Damian Lillard with basically an assassination with that long three-pointer. I mean, it was basically, he shot that from the book depository and ended the Oklahoma City franchise. I mean, they might as well just pack up and go back to Seattle for a while because they are now into a deep, deep rebuilding. Although maybe the return on those trades is—it's just so many draft picks in the future that they're not going to be good for a very long time because I don't see how they're going to attract free agents. So, I mean, considering that was their last kick at the can and the way that they lost in it, I mean, that's just bad.
All right. So let's talk about we've touched on a little bit the playoffs and the finals with Toronto defeating Golden State. Scott, just give some general thoughts on the playoffs, things that surprised, things that, you know, were, you know, that you liked, didn't like, well, things that happened during that whole run. You know, because the NBA is really – I hate the NBA playoff schedule because it's so based on the television and this and the other thing. We have teams like that could play and then not play again. So, Scott, give us some thoughts on the playoffs and the finals.
One team that I hopped on big time, only because I just loved watching them play, and I thought they'd make a run when they got to the Western Conference Finals, was Portland. I loved watching Lillard play, and just such a fun team to watch and such fun games to watch. They took out – and like Peter said, they kind of shat all over the Thunder with the Lee Harvey Oswald blowing out the back of Oklahoma City's brains. Beating Denver in a great Game 7. Great Game 7.
In Denver.
In Denver. And then just didn't have the horses to be able to beat Golden State when you thought Golden State was down. Disappointment in the postseason, at least in the West, the fucking Rockets. I'm tired of hearing about the fucking Rockets and they're fucking this and Harden and a bunch of points. And then they go to the playoffs and they fucking suck. So I'm done. I'm done with the Rockets. I'm tired of hearing about them. Tired of talking about them. They're never going to win. They're a shit show. So congratulations to Houston for being a footnote. fuck them. Milwaukee. I'm going to date my – well, I always date myself, and I usually don't give two shits. But I know Cowboy doesn't totally remember, but Peter and I remember the days of Sidney Moncrief and Terry Cummings and some of those great Bucks
teams. Oh, I remember that. Don't worry.
I know. I had a feeling you did, Cowboy. I had a feeling you did. But all those great Bucks teams in the mid-'80s that just couldn't get past the Hawks, who just couldn't get past the Celtics. But those Bucks teams are so – and then, of course, Ray Allen during those – and Eric Murdoch. Like that Fryer alum, drop that in there. The big dog and Glenn Robinson during those years when the Bucks had those butt ugly uniforms. And now it's good to see Milwaukee good again. I don't know if Milwaukee would have beaten Golden State, so if all the Warrior haters probably wish that Milwaukee would have won, but Giannis is going to be a stud again this year. So I liked watching them, and no disrespect, Cowboy, but they trounced a fucked up Celtics team. Thought would have made some kind of a run. But again, a lot of disappointments. Indiana, you're right about that one, Cowboy, or Peter. But if I had to pick one from each side of the bracket, Milwaukee's epic run to the Eastern Conference Finals, and I think they could go even further next year. And just the complete in the West, the combination of watching an entertaining and fun Portland team and just a fucking shit fire – I think watching them is worse than the Lakers. I think Houston's situation is worse than the Lakers. Who gives a shit about making the playoffs if you're going to have another year? And you played the fucking Warriors in Game 6 at home with no Durant, and you stunk up the fucking joint. Just like fucking Sacramento in Game 7 in 2002 against the Lakers. I love you, Todd Weber. But, you know, that's what it comes down to. You were at home in Game 6 with no Kevin Durant. And that game – was that game even close? I don't really remember. Let me look at the – I don't think that game 6 was even close.
The Warriors. I mean the Rockets had a lead, but the Warriors kind of turned it on. Like Steph Curry. Steph Curry had 0 points in the first half of that game, I believe, and then scored like 30-something in the second half, if memory serves.
Golden State won 118-113. Harden had 35. Whoop-de-fucking-do. Nobody was talking to each other. Fuck them. So
Houston, and they were up going into the fourth too.
Right. Curry went crazy.
Yep.
Yeah.
33. So the again,
were, the Warriors were 3-1 underdogs in that game. Just so you know.
Yeah. Crazy.
That was a good one.
3-2 lead. Three games to two. 2-2. They were even. They could have stole one in Oakland. They lost in Game 5 by 5 points. And then had a chance to force Game 7 at home. I don't know. Wait, did Oakland have the home? Oh, no. They could have gone back to Oakland where Golden State really was not world beaters in 2018, 2019. Not like in the past. And laid an egg. So again, my playoff memories, Milwaukee's epic run, seeing the Bucks good again, watching a fun Portland team, who I think will be fun again this year too. And then just watching an epic meltdown of the Rockets.
All right. Peter, what about you? Any memories of the playoffs you want to touch on?
Well, going into the season, I remember everybody sort of critiquing a lot, like sometimes with the Celtics or with the Sixers, like, why are these teams going for it? They're just going to lose to whoever comes out of the West anyway. And I appreciate teams that are actually going to shoot their shot, because you never know what's going to happen. If somebody's going to bust their Achilles tendon, I mean, you just don't know with injuries. One thing that I did like about there were a lot of like strange events that occurred. Like I mentioned, the Celtics sweeping Indiana after being dysfunctional the entire season. And then their game one in Milwaukee, which is easy to forget given how Milwaukee just steamrolled them the next four games. The Celtics won by 22 in Milwaukee on Sunday afternoon for a game one. And I thought, wow. Boy, this team's really pulling it together at the right time. And then they ended
up. Paul Pierce will never forget that one.
It'll be the. Guys. Yep. He went on TV and said something.
He said the series is over.
Yeah. Thanks, Paul.
He was right, but not the way he thought.
I guess it's not always the truth that comes out of his mouth, but there was that. Milwaukee just getting. That they lose to Toronto. I mean, the whole series tipped on that because it was one of those, the home team wins every game, which kind of drives me nuts about the NBA playoffs when, you know, you have all these series that, yeah, they go seven, but the home team just, you know, rolls in each one. They lose that game. They're up 14 at one point. They had a lead in the fourth, and they blew that, and then they lose game six in Toronto. The finals was interesting because I have no idea how often this has happened in any NBA series. The road team won five consecutive games, which just like that whole series just kept striking me like the road. How does Toronto go into Oakland and win three games against a team that, you know, they're not obviously not the same, but to win three games in a final? Well, I don't even want. I want to talk about that for the next sport, but it's remarkable in the NBA to win three games on the road in an NBA final. So again, I can't give enough credit to Toronto because they gave themselves a 1 year window and they took advantage of it.
Hmm. All right. Hmm. Roger, what about you? Playoff memories?
Yeah. I mean, the big one that sticks out for me is Kawhi's game winner, series winner against the Sixers. I thought that was a real seminal moment that we'll be watching 20 years from now. The ball hit the rim four different times on the way down. And I mean, and that really kind of embodied what these playoffs were. And they ended up being the playoffs of Kawhi, where he stuck his claim to being the best player in the NBA. I mean, he went head to head with Giannis, who's the MVP, and he thoroughly outplayed Giannis, right, in that series. That's why Toronto won, because their star was better than Milwaukee's star. Mm-hmm. And he was just incredible throughout the playoffs. And I think he was injured for the last two series, and it was still absolutely incredible. So that obviously sticks out. And just the Warriors' injuries, I don't, you know, I'm far from a Warriors fan, far from a fan of the super team thing. I don't like it. But when... You know, when Durant went down, I was kind of rooting for them, right? Because, you know, Durant and Draymond had that thing during the season, and we all knew, you know, anybody who follows the league knows that Durant's gone at the end of the year.
Hello? Raj?
As well. Was just brutal, especially in that. I mean, they were going to win that game. He had 30 when he went down, and it was just, you know, it was heart wrenching, and it's just that's always going to stick out that Toronto won the title. But I think if the Warriors were at full strength, the Warriors would have beat him in five games, like with Durant, and even without Durant, I think the Warriors would have beat him in six or seven. But more power to him. They won the title. They like you said, Peter. It truly ended up being a one-year thing. And I don't know if you go back and say to them when they make that deal for Kawhi, you're only going to have him for 1 year. Are you still going to do the deal? I don't know if they do it. Maybe they do. But it worked out as well as it could. And I think every Toronto fan would not trade that year of Kawhi in for anything. And it was a magical run for them. But, yeah, that shot and the Warriors' injuries are the two stories of the playoffs for me.
All right. Yeah, quickly, you know, just run through the award winners. Yeah, Giannis winning the MVP out of Milwaukee. Defensive Player of the Year was Rudy Gobert. Is that how you say it? I think Utah.
Rudy Gobert.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you can tell how much
of an
NBA.
Let me start as host here.
There you go. It's, yeah, right.
Giannis Antetokounmpo, MVP.
Why is he even doing this?
Rudy Gobert, Defensive Player of the Year. Luka Doncic, Rookie of the Year. Lou Williams, Sixth Man of the Year. And Pascal Siakam, Most Improved Player. Rudy Gobert and Lou Williams were two-time winners back-to-back.
Awesome. Awesome. Great. Great job in the NBA, guys. I'm a team player, Chris Colo, so be quiet.
Then you should just let him do it instead of stick your head in the sand. Giannis, Gyro, something, Spanakopita, something.
There were some tough names in there. I figured I'd step in and help a guy out. You know, that's what we're here for. No I in team, Scott.
Yeah, see, Roger doesn't call people out when
Except
they're struggling.
In Except in Greek.
Yes.
I in team in Greek, Giannis.
All right. Let's move over to the frozen pond and look back at the NHL season that just ended. So this was St. Louis Blues defeated the Boston Bruins 4-3. Do we need a moment, Scott and Peter, of silence for you guys? Or
and I was going to bail you out, and then you just got to stick the knife in our fucking.
I'm over it, but I'm not over it. If you catch my drift.
And all your 50,000 fucking Ranger draft picks. Why don't you put on your fucking Leach jersey backwards or something? Who, by the way, is from Connecticut.
It's a messy.
Yeah. Just keep talking. Nobody likes you. I always say that when I'm not. When I look, it was a great postseason. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, you never want to hear Sun Gloria again, I guess. Which is about to get knocked out of the 80s tournament by Papa Don't Preach.
Good. Ryan O'Reilly Preach.
All right, well, Scott, give us some teams that overachieved in the NHL this year.
Fucking Blues. No. No, I'll say that, and Peter would agree. The Blues, at the end of January, had the least points in the fucking league. They were dead last. Dead last in the league. And what the fuck they did, who knows? But they wanted an epic run and won the whole thing. I wouldn't say the Bruins overachieved because they had a great fucking season. They were fortunate. I wouldn't even say fortunate because I'll be honest with you. And Peter knows this better than I do because he watched the games live. I think the Bruins would have given Tampa a great series if they played in the Eastern Conference Finals. And I think they could have beaten them if they went that far. Just my opinion.
All right.
But I definitely think that Carolina overachieved in the East, and obviously St. Louis, obviously kind of like Toronto. Both winter champions thoroughly overachieved. Toronto, the Raptors and the Blues. Mm-hmm.
All right, Pete, what about you for overachievers?
Well, with Tampa and Boston, due to the NHL's terrible playoff format where everything is divisional up to the first two rounds, it would have led to Boston and Tampa, who had the first and third best records in the league, playing in the second round. But Columbus, with their shocking sweep, kind of took care of that. It'd be easy to call Columbus an overachiever, but given how they went all in at the trade deadline and it worked out from the perspective of they won a playoff series for the first time in franchise history, which is a nice hump to get over. But now all of those guys. The Carolina Hurricanes, though, because they had gone so long without making the playoffs, 2009, which is just an eternity even the Oilers had made the playoffs since Carolina had last done it. And the fact that they got all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals, that actually kind of does wonders, I think, for that market because it kind of rejuvenated thing. You had the marketing where Don Cherry called them all jerks for their post-game celebrations. I don't particularly care for those antics, but it works in that market, and you know, I'm not going to judge that. You do what you have to do in whatever market you're in to sell tickets, just as long as you're not throwing plastic rats on the ice. Also, the New York Islanders getting 103 points after losing John Tavares is some kind of weird smoke and mirrors magical stuff. I don't know what Barry Trotz does in every situation that he goes into, whether it be expansion Nashville or when he goes into Washington and somehow wins a Stanley Cup there a couple of years ago. But the Islanders finishing at 103 points is just an absolute shocker, given that they lost their best player to a conference rival and actually ended up winning a playoff round for the first time in a couple of years.
All right. What about some teams that disappointed, Pete?
Well, reflexively, I always want to talk about the Edmonton Oilers because they have the best player in the game in Connor McDavid. They have Leon Draisaitl, a guy who nobody really gets to see because you don't see a lot of Oiler games on NBC or NBCSN, but they don't have anybody on their blue line. Their goaltending, no matter who they go out to try and get, they're just disappointing year after year. And you got to think at some point you have this guy who is the best player in the league, and you can't even make the playoffs in the Pacific Division. It's just so insane looking at it. In terms of I'm looking at the East standings last year. I don't want to call out the Rangers because they were kind of rebuilding anyway after making some trades. So it kind of did turn out in the East the way people thought. I mean, Ottawa was a complete joke, but I mean, that wasn't so much a disappointment. But you got to point to Tampa Bay Lightning finishing with the most wins in NHL history, 62 in the regular season and zero in the postseason. I mean, they didn't underachieve, but my God, they underachieved after game 82.
Yeah. Scott, what about you?
I'll be quick. In the East, I got to go with the Devils. You know, here's a team that made it to the playoffs last year out of the blue, and I thought they could have taken a step ahead and didn't. They finished with the second least points in the league, in the conference, behind, as Peter said, the dumpster fire Senators. In the West, it's clear as day. I mean, at least Mike Trout plays for a moderately average team, but what the fuck? Connor McDavid and the Oilers get 79 points? I mean, come on. That's ridiculous. That's nuts. That's nuts. Edmonton should be much better than they are. But I was expecting more, and I know they probably overachieved last year, but I was expecting more out of the Devils this past season than I did. And they finished with the second least points in the league. They got off to a hot start, too. And they were hanging around a little bit through Christmas, and then we got to the new year, and then they kind of faded. So
they
I was a little surprised.
They had some bad injuries.
They did.
To the point where when they came into Boston in March, I was just appalled at the AHL-style lineup that they were fielding at that point. But, yeah. Hey, it worked out because the ping-pong balls fell their way.
They did, big time. So they should be a little better this year, but I was expecting a little more out of them. But, yeah, the injuries didn't help.
Cool. Before we move on, the Cowboy had to bounce, so just want to give a quick shout-out to Roger. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Yes.
His NFL show will be back with Mr. D'Amato very soon. And then also look forward to the Cowboy taking the reins, so to speak, when we do these sports editions. So, but let's talk about the playoffs. I mean, I'm not, you guys are Bruin fans. I felt bad. I was pulling for you guys. I'm not kneeling. You know, I know what it's like to be disappointed. Trust me, Ranger fan. One cup in my lifetime. So, one cup of my dad's lifetime, and he was born in 1940. Talking about the playoffs. Give us some memories of the playoffs, though, in general. Like, I believe, like, all the top seeds were all knocked out, right, in the opening round. Is that true? When I was because I didn't pay as much attention. But,
yep.
Yeah, so has that ever happened before, that many upsets in the playoffs?
I I don't think it has ever happened in round one. I know in 1993, all the division winners were out after the second round.
Okay.
And you had a league semifinals of three seeds, all teams that finished third in their division that year, although some of them were much better than others. But it just goes to show how thin the margins are in the NHL. As opposed to the NBA, where you have teams that are just clearly a cut above, and you have shorter series. I mean, Tampa finished 29 points ahead of the Blue Jackets, but it was such an outlier because they were 19 points or so ahead of the second and third best team in the league, which is Calgary and Boston at 107 points. But the margins just get so thin because you got Washington lost a game seven on home ice in overtime to Carolina. I mean, a bounce of the puck here or there, and that goes in the other direction. But the Central Division, you had teams, I think it was 2 points apart between first, second, and third. So it's really just a coin flip between those. Nashville's at 100, Winnipeg at St. Louis were at 99. And, you know, these type of things just seem to happen in the NHL more frequently. And I think it's a function of teams that are at the bottom of the playoff picture are fighting and scrapping from, you know, January, February. Every single game is like a playoff game for them. So they kind of come into the playoffs in that mode and they're all set to go. And if you get a team like Tampa that maybe falls asleep for one game, like they blew a 3-0 lead in game one against Columbus, these type of upsets can happen in that situation.
All right. Scott, what about you?
I mean, Tampa, who took a 3-0 lead, I don't know what the fuck happened at the end of that first period of game one against the Blue Jackets, but the minute the second period of that series started, just everything went down the fucking toilet for Tampa. I don't know what happened, but they score 3 goals in that first period, blow the lead, and I don't think they led in the game after that. That's outrageous. Carolina looked amazing. I think they played a little bit over their heads. I think the biggest disappointment, I'm not saying this just because they lost to a team that ended up beating us, but I thought Winnipeg was going to be a lot better than they were in the postseason. And then they just dropped a sixer to the Blues. I was expecting a lot out of Winnipeg this year, and that didn't happen. I liked Colorado going into the season and going into the playoffs, but I didn't think they were going to beat the Flames in five. I don't know. Some of these one seeds just didn't show up. It's very strange to see that many top flight teams just look that flat. I don't know, Peter. It's weird.
I think Nashville, like I said, it was 100 points over 99 for the next two teams. Nashville had definite weaknesses, and they could not get their power play going at all.
Right.
In that series, and they were so disappointed to the point where they unloaded PK Subban without even really thinking about it, and then signing Matt Duchene away from the Columbus Blue Jackets, so maybe change to more of an offensive minded team going forward. I think there's also some concerns about Subban's injury history and that contract going forward. I think a function of him being traded is he's one of the few high salary players who doesn't have a no trade clause in his contract, so he actually can get moved.
Right,
that's probably why that happened. But
yeah,
Nashville, yeah, they kind of limped into the playoffs a little bit, and like I said, they end up playing a team in Dallas that is fighting and scrapping for the last 2 months of the year. So they're in a completely different mindset, whereas Nashville didn't really have that same pressure on them unless you'd say, okay, we want to get home ice in the divisional playoffs or anything like that.
Right.
All right.
The Islanders sweeping Pittsburgh. That was something bizarre. Yeah. I mean, Pittsburgh won two cups in the previous 3 years, and now they're going out in four straight to the Islanders. I mean, you just never know what you'll see.
Nope, you don't. Most unpredictable postseason in all the four sports.
Yeah, and then I'll try not to butcher these award winners. Yeah, Nikita Kucherov from Tampa Bay.
Nikita Koloff?
Oh, and then you had Defensive Player of the Year was Mark Giordano from Calgary. Elias Pettersson from Vancouver was your Rookie of the Year. Andre
Vasilevsky.
All right. Tampa Bay Lightning, that's your Goaltender of the Year. And Barry Trotz, as Peter so went on eloquently about earlier, was your Coach of the Year. As the yes, I have such a hatred for the Islanders being a Rangers fan. So, oh God, man! Growing up, going to Ranger Islander games, never saw more fights in my life. So more fights at those games than I did with Giants, Cowboys, or Giants Eagles.
Bruins, Canadians,
really?
Well, once upon a time, about 10 years ago, they hardly ever do this. They made it a 1 beer limit at TD Garden for Bruins, Canadians games only. So
wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's like when you know, we lost the no beer at night games because of the damn Jet fans for a number of years at Giant Stadium. And that was when the first iteration of the XFL. So we had to really drink before in that freezing cold. We couldn't even drink at those shitty games. We had to make sure we drank before so we could tolerate that crap football.
Well, sure, Terry O'Reilly's rib joint on Canal there probably is loving life during the Canadiens games because they get pounded now that Sully's is closed, but we'll talk about that off mic, Peter, because I wanted to talk to you about that. But anyway, lots of beer. No problem with me. I approve.
All right. I approve. Great job, guys. Awesome first sports edition of Looking Forward to Back. I appreciate you guys being here.
Absolutely.
So, like I said, Roger will be back with this week in the NFL, I believe it's going to be called, Mr. D'Amato. But, Peter, what's going on in your neck of the woods? How's the greetings from Allentown?
Well, the greetings from Allentown that's out as of this moment right now was on WCW Saturday Night from October 2nd, 1993. Not exactly a high point in the history of that company, but, you know, I went in and I tried to make it funny, and I feel like I did okay. But the next greetings from Allentown is on a historic date in music history. Yes, I said music history. It's championship wrestling for the WWF August 1st, 1981.
Ah.
Now, guys, you know what happened on that day, right?
Ladies and gentlemen, rock and roll.
Yes. And believe me, I talk about that because I talk about a lot of non-wrestling stuff on my nominally wrestling podcast. Like my 3 minutes on Jeffrey Epstein's death last week. Like, oh, come on, people. It was simple incompetence. Take a look around. I mean,
all right. And I believe, are you going to be the third man on the next episode of Place to Be podcast?
Oh, yeah. I actually watched that Saturday Night's Main Event 4 weeks ago because I lost track of when my date was.
Awesome. All right, cool. So make sure you check out Greetings from Allentown and Peter's appearances. And then if the Adams Division podcast makes a comeback, check that out. You and Mr. Bennett, correct?
Yep. We'll the next one is going to be our top five single season sports teams that we've loved and enjoyed over the years. And we only postponed the second half of it because it was in the middle of the Stanley Cup final. And I kind of needed to see how it would shake out because it might affect my number one and number two.
Mm-hmm.
But as it turns out, no changes.
All right. Scott, what's going on with you coming up?
Well, you tell me.
That's true.
Of course, this show is tremendous. Tomorrow night, you and I will be recording with Mr. D'Amato and the Doctor as we do our next chapter of our the next episode of our tremendous series, This Week in Pop. This Week in Pop. Yeah, I'm just morphing all these titles together. Year in Pop. And it's actually, and I said it to you today when you came over to my desk, it might be one of the best, the first real game-changing episode we do because it's probably the first real historic year of everything in our timeline, 1977. You pick the category and something huge happened in 1977. Music, movies, TV, news, sports, doesn't matter. So look forward to that recording tomorrow night. And then this week, Wednesday, we will be recording our next episode of Place Be Nation's main event. Just me, Nate, and Steve. No special guests. We're just going to shoot the shit on stuff going on in wrestling. We're a week and a half away from AEW's All Out. And then we will have our next installment of the New Japan Classic Match Pick. I got to pick two matches from a guy who won multiple G1 climaxes, his first win and his last win. So stay tuned this week to Main Event and figure out who we are talking about. And as mentioned, Mr. Winston will join my PIC and I 1 week from tonight for the next episode of Place Be Podcast, the November 25th, 1989, Saturday night's Main Event. So looking forward to that.
Awesome.
And Peter, Justin decided we're not doing football, so he's not expecting you to go 14-0 so you could remember, you know, Vinny Testaverde's undershirt.
Well, I didn't think we were going to have it because you guys have had like three straight shows that are all from this.
I was just going to keep stretching the season out. So, so anyway, busy week for me on both feeds. So.
Also, yeah, from like Scott said, Year in Pop 1977 is recording tomorrow night. Also, I have the regular versions of Looking Forward, Looking Back, the big fall and winter movie preview that will be recorded next week. And so far, I have confirmed the Talkin' Pop Kang, Miss Jennifer Smith and Mr. Tim Capel. Maybe a pop-in by somebody to talk about a big movie in December at some point during that show as well, but we'll have to wait and see how things line up that night. And then after that, coming in September, we have Looking Forward, Looking Back, the big summer movie wrap-up, summer movie wager results, and find out who won, who had the best at picking the domestic box office for this summer. How did, you know, everybody fare after Endgame? Basically, that's really what it comes down to. So look for those in September. New episodes of Laughing Theater coming soon. And also, hopefully, another great debate sometime in September. So look for all that stuff. Check out all of our shows, though, on both feeds. On the wrestling feed, where Scott and Peter hang out a lot. And over here on the pop feed, which is my primary home, my only home right now, until a wrestling show comes my way at some point. And check out the website. Go to the Facebook page for the Greatest Song of the 80s tournament. Make sure you vote every day. Six matchups a day. The tournament's going to be going on probably for about another month and a half. And after that, we'll dive into another pop culture area for find out what the greatest this, that, or the other thing is. So, for the Cowboy, Roger Morissette, for Peter Winston, and for Scott Criscolo, I am Andy Athan. Thank you for Looking Forward, Looking Back, Sports Edition number one. And we'll see you next time.
Oh God.